Seneca and swearing in a new police officer, Layton.
Good evening, council. I'd like to take 10 seconds and introduce to you our newest officer is Adam Latin. Adam was born and raised in the Tri-Cities, and now he lives here in Othello. He's renting a house over here on Hemlock Street. His mom and dad and two brothers also live in the Tri-Cities, and they couldn't be here tonight because of a family emergency. But he just completed the academy in April. He started his FTO program, and so we're looking forward to getting him out on the road. And tonight's the night he gets sworn in.
Okay, 2.02, first quarter report from Adams County Fire District Number 5. Chief Liebachen?
Good evening. I'll kind of skim the highlights of the minutes from the first annual meeting we had this month. The first quarter, we had 25 calls, up 3 calls from last year. 1 fire and displaced in the family. 8 trainings, and we've got enough. Well, we had enough. If you remember, 2 years ago, we had the wall flush over. helps us to maintain a 5 in our insurance rating. That's something they will look at when they come in and audit us, that we're doing a hydrant check, flows, and maintenance. I've kind of hit the highlights. If you have any questions, for me.
No questions? Well, we appreciate our relationship. Tell the guys they do a great job on your positive things, and you know, we feel pretty lucky to have our relationship that we have, so.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, 2.03, Planning Commission Recommendation, Residential Parking. Daryl?
Thank you, Mayor, members of the council, good evening. You may recall that at your work study session last month, you had the issue of residential parking come before you for discussion. And at that time, the council directed that the Planning Commission take a look at the parking regulations for residential parking in the city of Othello and to review those and to bring back a recommendation in regards to modifications, if any, that should take place to those parking regulations. At the regular March meeting for the Planning Commission, they did take up the issue and had a pretty extensive discussion in regards to the existing parking regulations. And as a result of that review and discussion, they have offered a recommendation back to the council, which would indicate no change in existing regulation. They, in speaking on behalf of for the Planning Commission, they indicated in their meeting and as part of their motion that they felt that the existing code currently was providing very adequate parking regulations for all new development, and that they were very pleased with the level of application of those parking regulations within the new developments that were taking place in Othello. But they also felt that it would be unfair to those who are living in existing neighborhoods to drastically change the regulations that may have a significant effect upon those residents. And they felt that over time, as the appearance and character of Othello changed with the new development coming online, that over time, the parking regulations throughout the city would begin to have a more uniform appearance simply because of the new development coming into place. They were also concerned, and there was concern expressed by Planning Commission members, that the city not over-regulate aspects of people's lives. And while that wasn't a major point of discussion, it was one that was discussed for quite some time in terms of how the city should approach regulations and what the expectations of the citizens of the city should be in terms of city regulations on things such as parking. But mainly the issue came down to in established neighborhoods where people move into those neighborhoods, they have a realization and expectation of what's already taking place in those neighborhoods. And those that have that expectation should not have drastic changes to what those expectations are. And I hope I'm explaining that well on their behalf. The bottom line is that they felt that the parking regulations actively enforced, as we are doing, meet the requirements of the city, particularly in those existing neighborhoods, and continued application of the parking regulations and new developments as they apply will, over time, change the appearance and aesthetics of the city in a very positive way, and feel that that's a very good direction for the city to go. I did anticipate that we might have the chair of the Planning Commission here this evening so he could explain the position further, but I see he's been unable to make it tonight. So I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have in regards to the discussion that took place or the overall recommendation that the Planning Commission had brought forward.
Questions for Daryl or discussion? Mark?
Yes, I'm very confused. We have a prime example on North 4th of 5 cars in the driveway plus a camp trailer, 2 cars on the yard plus a boat. And I know Mark Snyder sees that every day coming, going to work. It bothered him. I don't like it. I thought it was a consensus of the council. We did not. That was not the standard we wanted to establish for this community. And my impression was that we directed staff to take care of that, and it keeps coming back to us that our requirements don't have the teeth to do anything with that. So my question is, did the Planning Commission find that kind of conditions acceptable, or do they think that we have the teeth in our current regulations to do something about it?
No, I believe the Planning Commission understood that our current regulations could not effectively deal on a regulatory basis with the one situation that you pointed out on four. That was understood by the Planning Commission, that through our enforcement action, we're not going to fix that situation because the code simply does not provide us the tools in order to do that. They did recognize that the code does provide us some enforcement action, and in some cases, that's become a very effective tool in certain situations, but not in those situations where people are parking, as you described, in their front yards with that kind of number of vehicles. I mean, they do recognize that our code will not solve that problem.
So in the new developments, they can park in their front lawns and everything too?
New developments, you can't. The regulations for new developments are substantially different than those that we can apply on existing developments. On new developments, as the code is written, it's a very tight control over where the parking can be, how many parking spaces you need to provide for vehicles. In new developments, you must have parking inside a garage or carport. There's a whole host of very specific regulations that apply to new development. The situation that was described on 4th would not occur in a new development. It would be a different set of regulations that apply to those new developments than the existing neighborhoods that you currently have. The other conversation that the Planning Commission had was the difficulty in established neighborhoods of enforcement if we were to apply more strict regulations in those areas where there were not improved roadways, such as curbs and gutters. And I honestly don't remember whether on 4th that was one of those situations, but they did just have that discussion and recognize that there was not uniformity within some of the established neighborhoods as to where the street parking ends and where yard parking begins, because there isn't the interface of the curb, gutter, sidewalk that you would have in all of our new developments and in many of our established neighborhoods.
So how far back does this date go for a house to fall into this new category?
Well, from the date of adoption of these regulations that are currently in effect. So I believe they go back a number of years, actually, and all of the new development which has taken place in the city in the last several years has required implementation of the current regulations. And it's beginning to show. You drive through the development that's taking place to the southeast of town, and all of those neighborhoods have been built under those requirements. And with very few exceptions, we just don't have the enforcement issues up there because of the way the lots are established, the way the drives are established. They have cutaways for the driveways versus rolled sidewalks or other means. And it's clearly identified and defined where those parking areas should be in those developments. And that's the way all developments will look in the future, as well as those that have been recently done.
So right now I can start parking in my grass in my front yard.
I'm not quite certain where you live, but if you live in a neighborhood that does not have specific covenants that prohibit that, or if your development was not approved under these regulations that are currently in place, then if it's more convenient for you to park in your grass 3 feet from your front door, I suppose that would be available to you.
Well, I know my house is older than their house.
Well, one of the things that does happen too with developments is some developments have a set of covenants within their development, and although the city does not and cannot legally enforce those covenants, the property owners themselves can. And so within your development, you may have certain requirements and regulations that your neighbors will come and talk to you about if you don't comply. And that's sometimes can be a very effective tool as well. The Planning Commission did talk about that a little bit, that in some neighborhoods there seems to be a higher level of peer pressure for improvement of the neighborhood than in others. And that they felt that as people move into these established neighborhoods and they're improved and they're remodeled, that just the simple peer pressure of neighborhoods will begin to bring these sites more in line with current regulations as well. So again, I think it fell back to their feeling that they did not want the city and these established neighborhoods to get into a over-regulatory approach, because people are dealing with these issues on a neighborhood by neighborhood basis, and each neighborhood has its own characteristics. And I come here this evening, please remember, with the messenger name tag, reporting the results of their discussion. I'm fully involved in formulating that recommendation.
Well, so in new developments, you can't drive over the curb to park, but in the old ones, you can't.
Well, and this becomes an interesting point, because it's always illegal to drive over the curb under the regulations. So if we can demonstrate that in order to park in a certain area of your yard, you've driven over and perhaps damaged city curbs, we've taken action in those cases. We have one just down to the south of City Hall where we worked with the property owner, where he was clearly coming over the curb, damaging the curb with his actions, and we've since ceased that activity. So where those situations occur and we have evidence of that and there's damage to city property, certainly deal with that issue outside of the specific parking regulation.
A lot of times there's the boat with the car hooked to it. The car's halfway in the road and it sits there all day.
We're very active, and we have a file now that's quite thick. Boyle brought it out just a few weeks ago when we were having this discussion.
part of the rental thing is the city ordinance is you cannot park cars on undeveloped areas, or what, you know, it's all described in the ordinance in Pullman, which is an older town, which parking is a premium. So a town like that is able to do it and enforce it, and I think we should at least get to that bar. Now, the other thing is the number of cars in the driveway, which I thought was addressed at one point, that it was, you're only supposed to have two in the garage and two in the driveway or something.
You know, that's a tough problem. I mean, if you can, I can afford to buy 10 cars, like, and they all run, then I should be able to park them wherever I want, as long as it's not a nuisance to the community. I mean, and there's people in this town that can afford to buy 10 cars if they want to.
Well, that's why we don't have any regulation, because I adamantly disagree with that. I mean, if you had 10 cars, they're going to be all over your front yard, so what have we accomplished?
But I'm not saying we're talking about that type of car. We're talking about the cars that we call abandoned, so to say, where they don't run. They probably, they don't have an engine, per se. You know, that's what we got to address first. And obviously, if you own 10 cars, they're probably nice. They're not sitting out in your front yard.
Well, there actually is state regulations about, I can't remember the term, but they have to meet 3 out of 6 or something, abandoned cars.
Just to be clear, we do enforce requirements where we have a vehicle that doesn't meet those requirements of the state definition. And we have towed a lot of cars in this town. So we do have ways to deal with those vehicles that are inoperable and are basically junk vehicles to have those removed. But even looking at those on the fourth,
serious, I came by it tonight and there was 5 just on the cement. I don't know if we're enforcing the grass rule. The boat was on the grass. 5 on the cement plus the camp trailer. It's just unbelievable to me that that would be acceptable to anybody.
Can you enlighten us on the new regulations of new neighborhoods?
The new regulation, or the regulations in new neighborhoods, require that you provide 2 parking spaces either in a carport garage and space outside of the garage for at least 2 but no more than 3 vehicles.
And then 30 feet?
And then 30 feet wide as an entrance is the maximum. You can have less, but that's the maximum.
Which makes up most sense, like one works.
But it cannot be grass.
Well, it has to be hard surface.
It has to be hard surface, yes. Or gravel.
It can't even be gravel in a new development.
Does it have maximum how many cars you can have as long as you have enough concrete?
2 in the garage and 3 in the driveway.
I mean, at one time, I'm probably more stringent than most of you folks, but to have cars in the backyard that can be total junkers, they have to have a 6-foot fence. And my recommendation with the standard would be that you have a maximum of 4. If you have more than 4 junk cars in your backyard, even with a 6-foot fence, that's enough. 4 is enough. Beyond 4, you're just a junkyard. But people can have 10 dead cars in their backyard as long as they have a 8 or 6 foot, what's the term, non-visible?
Side obscuring
fence.
Yeah, side obscuring fence. That ordinance goes back a long way. But it's never been enforced. Because you find them with junk in the backyard, you've got a barbed wire fence.
And many communities actually say that you can have 1, because that's the one that you're working on, or it's a collector's car, or for some reason it's something that you're keeping to rebuild. Or you have to have them in a fully enclosed building out of sight. But most community regulations that try to deal with this issue don't allow a number of unworking, unlicensed vehicles even in a backyard. That they recognize that if you're going to be rebuilding a car, it needs to be done either in a closed shop, or you can have up to 1, and no more than 1, in your backyard, and even then it needs to be fully enclosed or side obscuring fence. So the many regulations that deal with this issue deal with them very strictly.
Yeah, well, I think people talk about us over-regulating. I have an article at home. I should have brought it. For us, parking on the streets, a little sidebar, we give them like 30 days to move it. in Kennewick, if you have a car on the street that doesn't run, you have 72 hours or it's towed. So that's the difference, you know, of some of these other communities, what standards they're going to, which I would like to move toward. We can spend all the money we want on beautifying Main Street. They get one block off and they see this disaster. It look like a bunch of hicks.
I'm going to be off the wall from the rest of you, but what I've seen from the Planning Commission, I kind of agree with right now. We spent a lot of time a couple of years ago changing these and tweaking these, and we could keep on doing that. And now I hear tonight we're picking out one individual house and wanting to change them for the one individual house. I see in your monthly reports that we get that
against community standards to have yards looking like this with junk cars packed in the front yard.
Well, but I will say that I think that the regulations of the new developments are working well. We don't have these problems in any of the new developments that are within these requirements.
Tim, I agree. I believe that the new developments, if I'm up there in the Olsons, and if I wanted to buy a property that I can access, that's the first thing I'm going to look at. That's a buyer's choice if I want to access my backyard. That's the buyer's choice to do that. If I know I can't access that property through the backyard, then it's going to be one of my choices to buy that piece of property. I can access my backyard through my front. I do have enough room that I can access. And there is some up there that can do that.
Maybe.
brought tears to my eyes. Did you hear her run those numbers?
We have them prepared just for you. I know. I was like, at the last meeting, I was like, where's Mark? And you know what? I got to throw some numbers at him.
That was awesome.
Well, and this is going to simplify your scheduling,
definitely,
too, correct?
Well,
she said that she could keep the guards that are on swim lessons, strictly on swim lessons, and they'll get their full hours for the week, and they'll just work split shifts in the morning and in the evenings.
Right.
And then the people guarding for the open swim,
it's an open swim,
so we'll get their
like,
hours during that time. So it'll
be like three
easier.
Different shift changes throughout the week.
And it cuts back on our concession time being open on that last couple of hours where we were losing.
Based on last year. I don't know if they threw the numbers at you, but it actually cost $172,000 last year to run that pool for 60 days. So that's almost $3,000 a day. So it's phenomenal what we're paying to run that pool. And this is the first I saw this, and it's radical. But I agree with Ken. I mean, that our pool is underutilized. That $172,000 was against revenue of $61,000. So we're supporting that pool for over $110,000 for a 60-day run, which if any businessman looked at that, they'd never build a pool. However, we look at the intangible benefits of having a pool, so that's why it's there and that's why we run it. So. You know, change isn't going to make it worse. I mean, that pool is not, like I said, is not utilized, and I think we've had to turn kids away for swim lessons. I've never heard of swim lessons at night before, but I think it'll work.
I know there's been times I think that I took my kids to sign up, and they had already filled up. And plus,
so
and then having them in the evening also, I know there's a lot of real little ones that don't like to get in that water in the morning because it's way too cold, and they're just shivering, and a lot of parents will like take them.
Challenges. We've got actual schedules for concession stand people, and there's days they work 12 to 14 hours in a day. Now, how that happened, I have no idea, when the concession stand's only open, or the pool's only open for 8 to 10 hours. But that might be illegal to work a teenager for 14 hours. The other thing I'm getting feedback on is people who work at the pool don't think they get breaks. They say, yes, we rotate around and we get to go into the office, but we have to keep busy. And I believe it's a law that every 2 hours you have to give them a 10-minute break, plus the lunch break at the 4 hours. So we somehow, I don't know what happened or what if they got a break, but people need to get the impression that they get a 10-minute break and they're not on duty and don't have to be kept busy.
Adam had many times they rotate in all together. They get an hour, 15 minutes each time, almost an hour a day when it was 7 hours of break, plus their half-hour lunch. So rotating in, going through the bathroom, coming out and having a snack, that's still considered a break because, yeah, they're going to walk through the bathroom, make sure something's not going wrong. Yeah, maybe you have to clean for a couple seconds, but you still can sit down and have a snack before you go back out. Several times they come in on rotation.
Well, just a benefit to you as a manager, make sure they know they're on break and they don't have to be
right.
kept busy or be
only
doing activities.
They
Eamon can check on that, but I'm pretty sure they have to have that break.
You're right, but there's also another category called intermittent breaks. And that also applies, say, a guard has to go to the bathroom, they come down one end and come back out. And there's 3 or 4 minutes gone. That's an intermittent break.
Okay.
And that counts towards 10 minutes. So, but we'll work through that. Thanks for bringing that up. That is a good point.
Rachel, we're impressed.
I don't know anything about the demographics of the pool use. I have no idea. But you know, four days of the week for fitness swimming. Is it used for fitness swimming 4 days a week, and we only have 1 day for family swim, where you come and you can't just dump your kids. You have to come and bring your kids and your family swims. Mm-hmm. But we only have 1 day for that.
Because
and it seems to me fitness, you know, a lot of fitness stuff is done 3 days a week. You know, why could it be Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday, and family swim could be on Friday and Wednesday? Like I say, I don't know the demographics, so, you know, you'll have to show me what, you know.
So fitness swim will contain water aerobics and lap swim.
Again?
Fitness swim will contain water aerobics and lap swim. We used to have lap swim from 9 to 10 every morning. Now that swim team has the extra hour, we have to be able to have lap swim because there are set 12 ladies that come into the pool for lap swim every single day. And they will swim laps at the same time we'll be doing water aerobics.
You were there last year and we had family swim. How many people show up for a family swim?
Wednesday night is a hot night. Because after youth group comes, family picks them up from church class, and there's 20 kids in the pool, just one family. And there's after church is when so many families come on Wednesday night.
Do we need to do it more, as Dan's suggesting, or is there just literally no spot for it?
If I want to bring, you know, let's say I've got a family of 4 or 5 kids, and I want to bring them to swim. But I don't want to have to put up with 45 kids in the pool running around, jumping, screaming, playing loud music and stuff. The only time I can bring them then would be on Friday, on Saturday or Sunday for those short times, and for 2 hours on Wednesday evening when, and you say yourself, that when the church groups get out, Mr. Tapp, you know, so. The leader of the church group brings them up there and says, well, we're all family, so we're going to swim. But it just seems, you know, if the demographics would support it, I'd like to see them have 2 days for family swim. But if it doesn't, then I'm out of it.
The thing is, on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights from 7 to 9, we're usually Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night from 7 to 9 are usually booked up with pool parties, paid pool parties. Because
okay, so then what you're telling me then, fitness probably isn't going to work on Friday night either.
If in a 2-week session we skip 2 days because there's pool parties, then the next week they'll be able to run those 2 days. They won't miss those 2 days.
The fitness swimming, they're not paid to go in, are they?
For water aerobics, they are.
Oh.
And lap swim, it's still the regular fee, $4 for an adult.
Is anybody going to show up for lane swimming at 7 to 8 at night?
If it's not offered in the morning, yes.
Okay.
So what you're saying is family swim, there was a lot of people there on Wednesday nights. The other nights, were there a lot of people? No. There's nobody?
No.
Is Wednesday night a night that you don't rent it out to a private party? Okay, so that's always open for family swim.
Right. Almost the whole summer last year, we could send 2 guards home at 5 because people were leaving. There was 10 guards in the pool or 10 kids in the pool, so we can have a rover instead of having everyone designated because there wasn't that people.
Are they going to sign up and pay for aerobics class just like a swim lesson?
Mm-hmm.
Then lap swim is just free time.
What?
Lap swim is free time. You walk in, say I'm gonna swim laps.
It's not free.
You don't have to pay to get in.
Yeah, it's still this regular fee, $4 for an adult and $3 for a kid.
Just admission though. No,
right.
No special fee for a lesson.
Okay.
I think it's worth a try. That's the bottom line for me.
And if no one comes for those 2 sessions, we can always go back to the 7 hours. But I'm pretty sure it's
him. And we tried stuff. I think we had pizza movie night, and I heard it was a total flop last year.
Yeah.
So we're trying stuff to get people to the pool, and we're still trying. I think maybe this will work. Swim lessons in
the
evening.
Schedule.
Really? They used to have swim lessons?
Pool.
Swim lessons in the evening?
Yes.
Man, I never knew about that.
Yes.
I think that'd be cool. I mean, people that work full time can come with their kids and get involved, and it might work.
I think it looks like the schedule is going to work.
Mm-hmm. Do we have to vote on this or make a motion?
No, not tonight.
Oh, right. I'm sorry. Yeah. Yeah, I forgot.
Well, thank you, Rachel. That was awesome.
Well, Rachel's here. Personal compliments about her, and that's why we brought her to the council to show you and demonstrate how creative she was.
That's her program. She put that together. So we were very impressed. That's cool. 2.05 swim pool use agreement, Amen.
You all have a copy of the current agreement that the pool committee went over. Just want to briefly hit some highlights with you as to the changes that were discussed at the pool committee meeting with the Barracuda swim team. If you have any questions for them, again, staff is here. So looking down the pool use agreement down to the section entitled training days, I'll just read through this because here's most of the changes. The city will charge Barracudas $11 an hour per guard instead of $40 a day, which is the old contract, for each day Barracuda elects to use the city pool for training purposes. From June 6th through the 10th, the old contract said 1st through the 10th, training may be scheduled from 3:45 to 6:45. The old schedule said 3:45 to 5:45. Monday through Friday, if the city pool is fully functional. After June 10th, training may be scheduled between 7 a.m. and 10 a.m. It used to be 9 a.m., so there's an hour increase there. The only other change is under meet days, and it's on page 2. Thank you. Actually, it's the third line down, middle of the sentence. It says the cost of pool use for evening meets is $50, which is the same as the old contract, plus, and this is the new part, $11 per guard per hour. And that's an increase, as you'll see, in the revenue source. And other than that, the last section on page 3, under term, this agreement expires on the last day that the Othello City Pool is open, and it says expected to be August 20th. We're going to change that to no later than August 20th. That's more of a legal term. And that is the Saturday before school opens. So any questions that Mr. Taft can answer, he's here, or we could look at the contract.
I'm just
talk to the school district and get rid of some of those days off so the year is shorter. We keep the pool open in September.
I have a little disconcerted about letting them have meets on Wednesday when that's our only and popular family night. Not on Wednesday? Well, it just says it in here.
So we can strike Wednesdays? Okay, thank you, Mark.
So that was quick.
So easy sometimes.
Yeah. Any other questions?
We will bring this back next Monday night for a vote.
I don't know if you folks noticed or not, but they get 2 hours instead of three for their lessons in the morning or their practice. And that's based on the premises of, one, utilizing the pool, and two, I heard a couple stories last year about all fellow citizens being turned away from the swim team because it was just too full, and just they logistically couldn't handle that many kids swimming in the pool. So hopefully they'll get kids, fill it up, and we'll get every citizen in town that wants to will be able to be on the swim team. Sounds perfect.
What'd you say?
Perfect.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank you, Eamon. Committee reports. Any committee reports?
You just read the full committee.
Okay.
You
heard it once. Yeah, okay. Unfinished business?
I just got a quick question on well 6. I know mostly we're doing work on it today. Have we got any progress report on it, or?
I'm getting a bar graph schedule for completion. I just don't have it yet. But they're reinserting the old pump and motor, as you know, with the bell and the bulb being trimmed a little bit. So we're still anticipating about 2,000 gallons.
And the numbers are still staying low on the fluoride? I know they're continuing testing on that.
The last test, yes. But talked about before, the numbers at the state or federal level are also going to go significantly lower. So we'll still have a gap.
Any other unfinished business? Main Street's moving right along, I'm sure everybody's noticing. New light poles, looks like they're going up now, huh?
They arrived today.
Yes, I see them down there in front of your store, Mark.
Yeah,
Ken.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's good. They've been really busy everywhere, I noticed. So that's fun. New business.
I have some items.
Okay.
I don't need to go first, but.
Any other new business?
Am I the only one?
You're it.
The street is substantially complete, and I would like to start taking back the town as far as, again, the standard of neatness. And I noticed in the Public Works report, they were going to start street sweeping the end of May, early June. Mr. Mayor, I would like to see if we can start that now. All the side streets off of Main have all kinds of gravel and stuff piled up on the in the curbs and off the main street. And if we need to get the Coyote Ridge crew with brooms to sweep up the big stuff and then bring our street sweeper in, but I'd start like to ratcheting up things and making it look nice and hopefully set a standard for our businesses in town who, again, have had the effect of gravel coming into the parking lot and just start cleaning up. So if there's any way, maybe you guys have staff meeting tomorrow, mm-hmm. talk to folks, see if we can schedule that in to start cleaning up a little bit back to the standard we're used to. And yeah, there might be a little more work to be done and some more gravel dragged around, but there's some big bad spots now, and I would like to see that immediately start being cleaned up. The rain helped today because it knocked down some of the dust, but it's the gravel's front and center.
Is that our responsibility, or is that the general contractor?
When will they do the striping?
Well, it depends. If it's drug in by cars, then it's ours. If it's left, it's the responsibility of the contractor.
Okay, well, we won't worry about that, but okay.
And they're going to stripe the streets?
Next week? Or is it this week?
As soon as the manholes and water valves are dry and concrete, so I'm anticipating next week.
Just out of curiosity, why did they put asphalt around some valves and manholes and concrete around others?
Because those are at the request of Public Works.
Concrete
underneath. We've always had concrete around all of our valves and manholes before. I was just wondering why we have some with asphalt and some that have the concrete like we always have.
I don't have a good answer to that.
I might make a comment on that. Most of those that you see that's got asphalt, it's also got concrete underneath it. So it's not going to be a settling problem. Mm.
Well, it's not a settling issue. It has to do with snow plowing. And I believe the concrete gives it a smoother so you don't catch lips and you don't catch edges and that asphalt the way it is,
half inch lip will catch that snow plow blade and almost spin the truck.
Oh, yeah.
You're right.
And there's a lump of asphalt around those valves and those manholes that is going to catch something.
We'll find out for
you. Anything else, Mark?
Yes. I'm still hoping that we're progressing on the walk path south of McFarland. My impression of that, I'll state it again, is one, that we did have an easement, and two, the school district violated that easement, and we were looking to mitigate that walking path south of McFarland to the four items have is one, they were supposed to repair the asphalt path that they drove on. Two, they were supposed to put up signage. Three, if you look at that, I guess if we're not going to get a walk path built south of the new bus lane like we originally talked when they did that, because we were originally told, oh, they're just going to put a new one in, that's not going to happen. If we're going to accept that they're going to cross over to the school, use their sidewalk, I want signs saying this is the walk path. And then if you follow that down to the end on 10th, there's a crosswalk that goes across to a sidewalk, and we talked about cutting a curb there so it's stroller, bicycle, handicap accessible, because right now it just hits a straight curb. We also talked about, since our walking path is 6 to 8 feet wide, widening the sidewalk there from that portion to the walking path, back to the asphalt one. So if I could get a status report on the update and how we're mitigating that with the school district, because people are out walking now.
Terry's meeting with
Orland.
Yes.
Orland.
Fabio. But he's meeting with him and talking. What's that?
Since you brought that up, I wasn't going to say anything. I talked to Eamon earlier today.
Oh.
At the east end of the walk path on Scooby Playground has been dug up. And it's been that way since last fall. They dug it up for some reason for the school water or something.
Big piles of
and it's been that way all the time. So people either have to walk out into the vacant lot to get around it, or you have to walk in the street.
and weather's getting nice, people are walking with their kids and strollers and stuff, and that hasn't been taken care of. The second issue is soccer field there is used about 3 days a week for official soccer games, and I get a lot of people parking. I drove by there the other day, and there was one car parked inside the walk path, one car parked on the walking path, partially on the walking path, and a couple of sets of track where people had driven over it, you know, just turning around. And they drive down into the bar pit and then stop there so that their bumper is right at the walk path. So I talked to him, and he said maybe we'll put some signs up there to keep people from parking there, but we need to get that fixed on that east end.
That's what they're going to be doing, Terry, and we're going to walk at the whole path and mark the areas that are bad.
I think it's about 20 feet long, and so people are walking out on the street to get around it.
I noticed on the south end of the McFarland, the walk path there, they've been using that as a driveway when activities go on the fields there. They've been using the walk path as a driveway and parking on the empty lot on the south end of this McFarland school.
Yeah, what I saw them is they're actually south of the new bus path. They go down the dirt road there and park. And if that's church ground, they need to do something about that. Either say no trespassing or develop it as a parking lot, because all that does is just loosening up the dirt. And
Eventually it's going to be a parking lot.
Yeah.
It is.
Well, yeah, but in the interim, you know, there was over 20 cars out there for a ball game out in the field.
Yeah, there's all the time.
I'm surprised the church, the liability of that, doesn't do something, but.
But I see people crapping on the walk down all the time.
Yep. Let's see. Here's something minor, but Rachel, you look for this. Apparently we had complaints about seagulls mounting on the lights at the pool, and we were supposed to get metal things. Is that taking place?
It is. Terry's got it on his list, and it's in his budget, so that'll be up for the pool.
Yeah, keep an eye on that, Rachel. Make sure that.
And there's no popcorn either.
Yeah, there's no more popcorn.
Okay.
We're not doing popcorn.
I don't know. Come after anything.
Let me go back one again to the four items that you identified that the school district agreed to do. As the mayor said, Terry and Orland are walking the entire project this week to include the walk path damage. The four items that the school agreed to do to put together a schedule and time frame to get that done. But the main purpose was to evaluate the walk path, as we promised you we would do come spring, and then report back to the council on the conditions we're talking about. And that's being done this week.
I don't know why, but it's important to me. And a big accomplishment we've done is as simple as I look over at the park, and we put in that parking lot at the north end of Lions Park, and to see people walking there with their kids and strollers and stuff, and I'm like, hey, we did that. That's cool, you know. So I think it adds a lot to the community.
That parking lot added a lot to that park.
Yeah. It's still early here. I'll get another couple. I think we touched on this about people making cuts in the road to hook up to our sewer something and the timing on getting that fixed. Is there any, maybe we should talk about Daryl's here. Is there anything that, a time on that? Because the school district did it. They got it fixed finally, but it was like open for 6 months.
The one up on 7th, they could finally fill. And yeah. But this is actually a mayor's hot button. He's asked us to put together an ordinance to bring back to you that would require a one-year performance bond that if they don't fill it within, I forget, 90-some days of completion, then we take the bond, we fill the cuts in the road. He's talking about water line, sewer line, cuts in the road. And they're only about 2.5 feet wide. But the more you have, the more the bump you have in your car,
right,
you drive over. That is an orange.
One on Hamlet has been open since they started that, going up.
They close it.
Yeah, it's covered
now. They're all done now.
Yeah. It just took them a while.
But what we're trying to do is require them to have it done almost immediately when they're done cutting the street. No more just constantly driving over it and the holes get deeper and call them and say, would you please fill it again? And, you know, that during the winter, if they can't get hot patch, they'll put cold patch in it. When it's all over, they can tear that out and put the hot patch in.
Perfect.
So, you know, things like that. So we're not spending all winter running over rough roads. So that's what they're working on.
And finally, that microphone there, I swear, doesn't work. Because when people get up and talk, I've been tested to have good hearing. I can't hear them, and I don't know how the audience hears them, and I don't think it's come over the system. So if you guys could test that and see what we need to do to get that done.
When we started tonight, there was some feedback, so I was trying
90% of the time when they're talking on that microphone, I can't hear them at all.
Yeah. That far away from
them. Unless they're really leaning towards it.
Well,
maybe it needs a volume or a different kind of mic or something, but. And I'm done.
All right. Anybody else?
Nope, Mark said it all.
All right. This meeting's adjourned. Thank you, everybody.